So before we start, let's review what we discussed yesterday about Eilenis and Mima'enis. Those were the two categories that we were focused on. And that's here on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph. And we were trying to figure out who is the author of the Braisa. The Braisa says, amongst the various, I think there were four categories of women that were excluded from Knas. So one of the categories was Mima'enis, which means she's a Ketana. But she's a Ketana who's married, albeit Midrabbanan, but she's no longer Basula. The implication is the fact that she was a Ketana, that she is a Ketana, that per se would not exclude the Knas of Onus of Mefata. The reason why she's excluded from the Knas of Onus of Mefata is because she's married. Why not just say because she's a Ketana? And that would indicate that the author of this Braisa would have to be the Rabbanon who maintained that a Ketana yesh lo Knas. That's before we introduce the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, which we'll get to in just a minute. Then, in the next category that's excluded from Knas in this price, so we have the case of Eilenis. Eilenis, as we said yesterday, is a Ketana, and she will always be a Ketana until she reaches Bagrus at the age of 20, but there's no transitional period called Narus. Now, there seems to be a contradiction here in the Braisa itself. On the one hand, Mima'enis, we led us to a diuk that had she been a Ketana who was not married, then she would get Knas. And on the other hand, Eilenis is excluded from Knas for that very reason, because she's a Ketana. How do we reconcile this unless we assume that the Reisha is the Rabbanon who hold that there is Knas by Ketana, and the Sefer is Rabbi Meir who excludes a Ketana from Knas?
No one offers the answer that we're talking about Eilenot after 12 years old.
It wouldn't make any difference because her status is Ketana. She continues to be a Ketana.
And there's no Havamina there or anything.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So now the Gemara makes an attempt to interpret the entire Braisa like Rabbi Meir. And the case of Mima'enis is actually a case of a gedola, meaning a nara. Now, how could Mima'enis be a nara? Once she's a nara, she has das, and therefore the kedushin, the ishus is doraisa, and therefore there could be no miun, right? Miun means to circumvent the need for a get. So we have to hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that we're going to extend her period of miun, meaning her ability to end this marriage with miun, even beyond her 12th birthday, even after she became a nara. And we're going to have a new shiur of the termination of miun. The shiur goes beyond naras. Naras shteisaras, but he's going to allow her a more advanced shiur, which is called shiyar v'shachar al lavan. And despite the fact that she's a Nara, Rabbi Yehuda is going to validate Miun. And the reason for that is because she hasn't consummated her marriage as a Nara. She never had a relationship, even one single relationship with her husband after she became a Nara. So we're going to extend her period of Miun even beyond that. So when it says, Mima'enis ein lo knas, what we're saying is that even though she is a Nara, which that would normally allow her to get Knas, in this case, since she's involved in a marriage with another man, and therefore we assume that on various occasions they had consummated that marriage, she's becheskas bu'ula, she loses her status as a besula, and therefore she doesn't get Knas. In the case of Eilenis, she doesn't get Knas because she's a Ketana. Now we have a consistent way of understanding this Mishnah. The Gemara rejects this interpretation attributing the Braisa to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir, in fact, is the Bar Pluta of Rabbi Yehuda, and he's the one who says that Miun terminates with Shtei Saras as soon as she becomes a Nara. So the moment that you utter the word Mema'enes, you're referring to a Ketana. And yet, what we're saying is that the reason why she doesn't get Knas is because she's married. She's in this rabbinic marriage, which is called Kedushe Miun. But had she been a Ketana, she would get the Knas. Now the Gemara tries to flip it around and say maybe this price is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. And maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Meir. And that would be great, because then we can reconcile Ma'enes with the case of Islandus, meaning Islandus is excluded from Knas because Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Meir that there's no Knas for Ketana. Ma'enes is a discussion about a Nara who's a Ma'enes, and therefore she should have gotten Knas, but she doesn't get Knas because she was in this marriage. And the Gemara rejects this interpretation as well, because it happens to be that Rabbi Yehuda never accepted Rabbi Meir's opinion. And how do we know this? Because it was a statement attributed to Rav on a comment that Rav made on the Mishnah later on, that the Mishnah, which assumes that there's no knas for a ketana, is Rabbi Meir. He makes no mention of Rabbi Yehuda. Apparently Rabbi Yehuda belongs to the school of the Chachamim that a ketana could get knas and would get knas. So the Gemara answers that the Raisa is a combination of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. It's neither Rabbi Yehuda nor Rabbi Meir, but it's a Tana who accepted Rabbi Meir in one dimension but rejects Rabbi Meir in another dimension. So the Raisa holds that Rabbi Meir is right. There's no knas for a ketana, and hence, in the case of an islandess whose status is continuously that of a ketana, she doesn't get knas. On the other hand, this tana maintains Rabbi Yehuda's shita that a mema'enes is even a nara. In other words, even though she passed her state of katnus and she entered into her state of naras, nevertheless she still has the ability, if there was no consummation of the marriage, to be mema'enes. So what we're up to for today is Rafran. So we're on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, and we're about halfway through the Amud.
Just before two dots I have.
Yeah, you have the two dots there, right before the two dots. Rafran Omar. If you have the Tosis Dibur Maskil Vim Iso, with the Tosis Velisni below it, it's like halfway through between those two Tosis. So Rafram is going to make one other attempt to interpret this Brisa as Rabbi Meir. The author of the Brisa is Rabbi Meir. How so? He says, "My Mema'enis," let's reinterpret the word Mema'enis. We assume that Mema'enis means that she's in a marriage relationship. Her brother or her mother married her off as a ketana. No, that's not what the word Mema'enis means. The word Mema'enis means Re'uyel Mema'en. The word Mema'enis is a synonym for ketana. And therefore, both in the case of Islandus and Mema'enes, we're talking about a ketana. And hence, there's no knas because the author of this brisa is Rabbi Meir. The Gemara is not happy with Rafram. Velisni ketana. Why would the brisa use this ambiguous term and sort of mislead us, leave us in the dark, and call her a Mema'enes, which means that she's in a marriage relationship? Velisni ketana. It should have gone straightforward in a clear way and said that we're talking about a ketana. And the Gemara answers, Kasha, we're not really happy with Rafram, and we're going to leave it as an open-ended question. The Rosh here, quoted in the footnote here, says that the word Kasha, as opposed to Tuvta, means that it's not upshlug, meaning there's still a possibility of giving an answer. And it could be that the Brisa wants to tell me something agav urcha, and that is, until what point can a woman who's a ketana be mema'enes? And the answer is, as long as she is a ketana, which means until but not beyond her having two saras. And in that case, the Bryce is telling me, Agav Urcha, a Chiddush, to exclude Rabbi Yehuda, who allows for Miyun even beyond Shteisar. So by calling a Ketana a Mema'enes, it's telling me, Agav Urcha, that you should know that a Mema'enes has to be a Ketana. If she's past Kadnus, she can no longer be Mema'enes.
Okay, I have a question. So what you said is, the Gemara has definitely rejected Vafram, but has not reached a final decision on the question. Is that what Kasha means?
Right. It is, on the one hand, we would rather go back to the previous answer that the Tanav Habraisa holds like Rabbi Meir with regard to Ketana not getting Knas, and holds like Rabbi Yehuda that an islandess is even after she's a Nara. Rafram tries, you know, with a valiant effort to attribute the entire brisa from beginning to end to Rabbi Meir, but then you have to be very liberal about the word Mema'enes and assume the word Mema'enes here in this context is a synonym for Ketana. That's a stretch.
Does the word Kasha sometimes mean there's a serious problem with the previous statement, but we're not rejecting it
exactly
entirely?
That's the difference between Ketana, between Kasha and Tiufta. Okay. Tiufta means an upschlag, you know, it's forget it, it's gone, and there's no reconciliation. But Kasha means if you think about it, you'll find some sort of an answer. And that's what the Rush took upon himself to figure out what answer could possibly, if the Gemara is implying that there could be an answer, and he says it's a Chiddush that up until she brings Shteisar, she could be Mema'enes. Once she brings Shteisar, she's no longer Ketana, there's no Miyun. Now, another question that we have to ask here is, why did the Braisa mention Islandess? If you've already established in the case of Mema'enes that according to Rafram's understanding of Mema'enes means she's a Ketana, hence she doesn't collect Knas, then why mention Islandess at all? Islandess is a Ketana, and especially if we're going like Rabbi Meir, and that was the implication of the Braisa using the term Mema'enes to indicate a Ketana, then you wonder what is Islandess adding to the whole picture? Yeah, Islandess is a Ketana, we know that. And if she's a Ketana, and this Braisa reflects the Shita that Mema'enes equals Ketana, and therefore she doesn't get Knas, then by definition an Islandess can't get Knas. So what was the Chiddush of the Braisa to add Mema'enes?
You mean that Islandess?
I would say Islandess, right. So he says the following, that apparently these are sugyas that we're not familiar with. There are debates about the status of an islandess. Our Gemara doesn't mention that, but apparently there are issues about an islandess. So to make sure that we understand that an islandess is a Ketana, the Braisa mentions islandess. And hence she doesn't get a Knas, because we're holding now like Rabbi Meir that a Ketana does not collect Knas. Okay. Now, at this point in the sugya, we're up to the next two dots, Islandess, and this is a quote from another Braisa.
No, it's the same Braisa, no?
Is it the same Braisa? Yeah, oh, you're right, it's the same Braisa. And we're about to quote a second Braisa. So the quote here of Islandess ein la lo knas lo pitui is the old Braisa, meaning the Braisa that we've been studying today and yesterday. But now Urimini means I'm going to ask you a contradiction from a second Braisa. And this second Braisa has a whole list of women who do collect knas. And we're going to have a chiddush in each one of these cases, but Islandess is on the list. Now, the Braisa is not addressing the case of the halach of Knas per se, but rather the question of who is considered a Besula, which woman has a cheskas besula, and that's relevant to the laws of ksuba, because the first part of this masechta, in the first parak of ksubas, addresses the categorization of besula and beula as far as ksuba is concerned. So, for example, in the case of a besula, haksubas masayim zuz. In the case of Ba'ula, Haksuba is only mea zuz. It's half price. You get a half price deal. Number two, and this is even more profound, the difference between marrying a Basula and marrying a Ba'ula is relevant to what's called Tainas Basulin, which means the following, that if a man marries a woman and he has every reason to assume that she's a Basula, and lo and behold, when he consummates his marriage after the chuppah, he finds to his chagrin that she's a ba'ula, which is called tainas besulin, which is the most, the most central theme of the first parak of Ksubas, is called tainas besulin. He comes into Bezdin with the following claim. He says, I wrote a ksuba for this woman. The ksuba was a ksubas besul of Masayim Zuz. And lo and behold, I find that she's a ba'ula. That's called the tainas besulin. And we're going to soon see that in certain cases he is believed. We don't suspect him of lying. But again, the whole premise of tainas besulin is that she has what's called a chezkas besula, meaning he was duped, he was fooled into believing that she is a besula. But there are certain women which you might question whether or not he had any right to assume that she was a basula.
Wait a minute. We're not talking about Motzi Shem Ra, where he's claiming that he cheated on her during the Kedushin
right.
period?
That's also going to be relevant to this sugya.
But that's not Tanat Betulin?
It is, but it's another dimension of Tanat Betulin.
Okay.
The dimension that we're going to focus on now, and we'll get to your question in just a few minutes,
mm-hmm.
is the monetary issue of Tanat Betulin.
Okay.
has two sides of one coin. The monetary issue is, does he have a right to say that I was cheated? You know, let's say you wanted to buy, you know, a box of glasses, right? And then one of the glasses came broke. So this is not what I ordered. You know, I wanted five mm-hmm. glasses, six glasses. So, or you ordered a set of six and they only delivered you five.
Mm-hmm.
Here also, I ordered a basula because I had every right to assume that she was a basula. And lo and behold, I discovered that she's a ba'ula. So again, there could be a number of categories of women whose status as a basula is questionable. And that's the subject of this braisa. But again, it's going to have an impact on knas. Why? Because if she's a basula, then she gets knas. If we have every reason to assume or even to suspect that she's not a basula and her cheskas basula is questionable, then she would not collect knas. So we're going to have this braisa that we're about to read. We're about to learn, and we're going to have another braisa that's going to contradict this braisa. There's going to be a whole series of contradictions. So let's read the braisa. The braisa says, "Hachereshes v'hashota v'ha'ailanis yeshlem knas," which means that the premise, the assumption is cheskas besula, hence she collects knas. And number two, therefore, yeshlem tainas besulin, if the man marries any of these three ladies, he has every right to assume that she's a basula. If he finds, to his chagrin, that she's a ba'ula, then he has a monetary claim with regard to the ksuba. Again, if we were learning the first parak of ksubas, we'd have to ask a different question. Can he get out of the marriage and say the whole marriage was predicated on a mistake, on a false assumption? That's a different issue. But right now we're talking about hefsek ksuba. Now, what's clear from this braisa, and that you don't have to debate this back and forth, it's explicit, is that an eilus does collect knas. And hence, viramini, this braisa contradicts the previous braisa. Because the previous braisa says that an eilus does not collect knas. So the truth is, even before we read the next line in the Gemara, we know the answer to this question. The first braisa that we've been studying for the last day and a half. That brisa reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir, that a katana doesn't collect knas. This brisa, on the other hand, reflects the sheet of the Chachamim, that when the Torah says Nara is in the parasha of knas, it means even a Nara, but certainly a katana. So that's what the Gemara asks for, my Rumya. You know, why are you getting all excited with a Ruminu, Rumya? Rumya means a stira, a contradiction. Ha, Rabbi Meir, Vaha Rabbana. You know, like, you know, you shouldn't have even asked this question. The answer is so obvious. Well, we never meant to say that since we found a brisa that says an island is does not collect knas, that therefore from now on, every single brisa that we're going to find is going to maintain that an island is does not get knas. Adarabba. Our brisa that says that island is saying lem knas is the exception. It's the das yachid of Rabbi Meir. But what we anticipate is that as a general rule, an islandist would collect knas because of the Rabbanan shita that even a katana collects knas. So the Gemara says, udekari le mai ka'ari le, when you called it out, what were you calling out? Meaning, what was your hava mina to raise a stira, a contradiction between these two brisos? Didn't you realize that one brisa reflects the shita of Rabbi Meir, hence islandist doesn't get knas, the other brisa reflects the shita of the Rabbanon, and an islandist collects knas because a katana collects knas. So what were you thinking when you said the word for a minute? And the Gemara is going to pull a very interesting move here. The Gemara is going to say that this word ureminhi that introduces a stira was not based on the previous brisa that we studied. The remini that we're gonna present here has to do with Chereshes and Shota. And the question is whether these ladies, which we're gonna talk about in a minute, do they have a Cheskas Pesula? And therefore when he marries her, he has to assume that she was a Pesula, and therefore if he finds her to be a Ba'ula, he has a Tainis Pesula. Or for example, in the case of an ones or a pitui of a chereshes and a shota, since she has a cheskes pesula, that's this first price, so that's the one that we're studying now, therefore she collects knas because she has a cheskes pesula. And here's the question, mishum de islay lemirma achriti iluye, what we really want to get to is a contradiction between the brisa and the next brisa that we want to study now, which in a sense is the third brisa, but for our purposes today we'll call it the second brisa. Why? Because the brisa of yesterday, that was Rabbi Meir Shita, that a katana doesn't collect knas. Today we're studying two brisos, both of which assume that a katana will collect knas. And the issue of these two brisos is, what's the status of a chereshes and a shota? Do these two ladies have a cheskas pesula, or do they not? If they have a cheskas pesula, there are two nafkaminas. Number one, onus umafatu peknas. Number two, if they have a cheskas pesula, there's a tainis pesula lahafsik ksubasa. Or do we say no, that these two ladies, you can never assume about them that they have a cheskas pesula, and therefore, number one, there's no knas, and number two, there's no tainis pesula to be mafsid the ksuba, because the ksuba itself would be ksubas meir. So the first brisa that we, again, it's the second brisa in the counting, but for today it's called the first brisa. The first brisa says that chereshes and shota have a cheskas pesula. But now we're going to read the second brisa. And the second brisa says the following. I'm going to skip two words, just for pedagogic purposes, and I'll get right back to them. Don't worry, I haven't crossed them out in the Gemara. Hachereshes vashota ein lahem tainis pesula. Okay, we're going to focus now for a moment on chereshes and shota. And we're going to say the following. In this second brisa, when a man marries a woman who's a chereshes or a shota, we'll explain, then the assumption is that he's marrying a Ba'ula. Why? And the answer is that if a man marries one of these women and he comes into Bez the next day, he says, Lo Matzasi of Basula, right? Pesach Basula of Matzasi, and he wants to be Mafsid of the Ksuba, the answer is that even if they don't have Basulin, right, Afsha Ein Lahem Basulin, lo nivalu al yidei adam shiyeh dino kibu'ulos, meaning that in these cases we're not sure exactly whether they are basulos. We have reason to believe that maybe they are ba'ulos, so we'll have to try to understand why. Don't ask me exactly yet why. We'll hopefully get to that. But now I want to get back to the Bogeres and Mukas 8 situation. These are ladies that do not have Besulin, but not as a result of a Ba'ila, but for other biological reasons. In the case of Bogeres, the Gemara says that when a woman reaches an age, again, you and I would think it's a young age, but here in this context it's an older age, meaning she's 12 and a half, then Besulea Kolim, which means that her basul in that membrane is already, dissolved. You know, it's no longer intact. Mukar Eitz is a girl who fell, and as a result of the fall, she lost this membrane called the basul. So therefore, if he knows when he married her up front that she's a Bogeres, presumably, you know, he saw her tudat leida, you know, birth certificate, and he knows that she's 12 and a half. In the case of Mukar Eitz, he was notified that she had this fall. Now he's going to come to Beis and claim, well, I didn't find Basulin and I was duped, I was fooled. No, that's not so, because he can't be mafsid ha l'ksuba. The assumption is that she doesn't have Basulin. And that's the premise that we're working with. Okay, fine. So that's Bogeres and Mukar Eitz. There's going to be a whole sugya about whether Kohen Gadol is allowed to marry Bogeres or Mukar Eitz, because the Torah says, "Hu isha b'psulel yikah," and she doesn't have b'sul. Fine. This statement of the second brisa for today regarding Bogeres and Mukar Eitz, that's universally accepted. That's not an issue. That's not the stira. Our stira is about Chereshis and Shota. It's the first price that we learned today establishes that Chereshis for Shota as a Cheskas Besula, hence she gets Knas. Hence, there's a Tainus Besula Hafsik Suvasa. The second price that says about Chereshis and Shota that she does not have a Cheskas Besula, she does not have Tainus Besula, and therefore the premise is that she had. Well, again, in the case of Chereshis Shota, she had a Be'ila. Now, there's a major issue here in the Achronim. If you'd like, we could talk about it. I don't know if I'm ready for it today, but maybe tomorrow. You'll have to submit an official request. But the Achronim are not sure what's the problem with Chereshis and Shota as far as Tainus Besulin is concerned. There's one school of thought in the Achronim, and they drew this conclusion from a sugya at the end of Masechet Yevamos, that it's not that we always assume in all situations that a Chereshis and Shota is a Ba'ula, and she had Be'ila, you know, and she wasn't aware of it, so to speak, or she didn't notify anybody about it because a Chereshis and a Shota are not Bardas, but rather for another reason. That the original takana of Besula getting 200 zuz did not include Chereshis v'shota. And let me explain why. The idea of ksuba, on the one hand, is to protect the interest of the woman, but on the other hand, it does work to some extent against her interest. What do I mean? A woman who has an expensive ksuba becomes, in a sense, a little bit more difficult to marry off. People are not so eager to marry off to marry a woman with a very heavy ksuba. Like, for example, the Mishnah in Masechet Ksubos in the first parak says that a kohenes gets a higher level of ksuba because a kohen is willing to marry a kohenes even if it costs him more. But again, by jacking up the price of the ksuba, on the one hand, it's a good thing for the isha because it protects her from divorce. You know, he has to realize what divorce is going to cost him, so he shouldn't just get angry and throw a get at his wife. But on the other hand, it really works against her if you jack up the price of the ksuba. So, for example, if the ksuba is not a mona mea zuz, but rather masayim zuz, then in a sense, she becomes a little bit less attractive. You know, it's a little bit more challenging for her to find a partner who's willing to marry and pay that ksuba. In the cases of Chereshis and Shota, the Chazal want to go out of their way to make it feasible for her to be, so to speak, an attractive marriage partner on the market. So what they did was they lowered her ksuba to Mea Zuz, and that would make it easier for her to find a partner. That's one school of thought. If that school of thought is correct, it's a little bit difficult in our context to understand how the Braisa connects or combines Bogeres, Mukareitz together with Chereshis and Shota, because Chereshis for Shota has nothing to do with her Basulin per se. You know, we're not talking about the biological situation of her Basulin. We're simply talking about the way the Chazal were masaking Ksuba. And when it says Eilin Titus Basulin, it means he can't claim, well, I committed myself to pay Masayim Zuz, now I got cheated, and I want to get out of this, and I don't want to pay the Ksuba. The answer is you never committed yourself to Ksuba Masayim Zuz, because Chazal never established the Ksuba Masayim Zuz in the case of Chereshis and Shota. So again, I'm just pointing out that school of thought is very problematic here in our sugya, because our sugya seems to assume that the issue about Chereshis v'Shota has to do with her Cheskas Besula or Cheskas Be'ula. Do we assume that she has has had Be'ula, even though she hasn't reported it to us? You know, maybe in a sense she's a little bit of a victim, a target, if you call it that. And in fact, the first price that we learned today says that Chereshis Shota doesn't get knas. Now, why shouldn't she get knas? I mean, that's a Doraisa halacha. So you tell me, because the Rabbanon lowered her ksuba from Masayim to Meah to make her a more attractive bride on the marriage market, the Shaduchim market, therefore she gets knas, or she doesn't get knas, meaning the issue of knas has to do with whether she's a basula or not. So I'm just pointing out, if you want, you could submit a request and we could really get into that. It's quite a suit. Now the Braisa addresses another case of a woman who doesn't have Tainus Besulin, and that's going to be a Suma, a blind girl. And once again, we're going to assume that she's a Ba'ula. She didn't know that she was a Ba'ula, and she didn't report it. We'll see why in a few minutes. And therefore she has a Cheskas Ba'ula, and there's no Tainus Besulin. Islandess. Okay, islandess is pretty simple, because she was in a marriage relationship before, and therefore the premise is that when he marries this woman, right, after Mirun, he's marrying a Ba'ula. She's been in a marriage relationship.
How do we see that she's been in a marriage
relationship? Islandess. Oh, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. You're right. I get confused between islandess and ma'enis, right? So islandess, so again, in the case of Suma and islandess, we're going to assume that they have a cheskas besula, and therefore yeshlem tainis besulin. So whatever I said before, forget about it. What I'm saying now is more accurate. So we're going to talk about Suma and islandess, yeshlem tainis besulin. In other words, what was the halacha meaning that they wouldn't have a tainis besulin? Sumchus Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Suma Ein La Tainus Besulin. In other words, when he comes to Bezdin the next morning after he consummates the marriage, he says, I was fooled here, I didn't find Besulin. Then according to Rabbi Meir in this tradition, we're not going to accept his claim. He cannot be Mafsid Haksuba. Okay, and the Gemara is going to explain why. But in any event, let's go back to Chereshis and Shota. We have now a head-on collision between two brises regarding the status of Chereshis and Shota. Do they have, these women have a Cheskas Besulin or not a Cheskas Besulin? In the first brise, we assume she's a Besula, and therefore there's Tainus Besulin, and she gets Knas. In the second brise, we assume she's a Ba'ula, and she cannot collect Knas, and he cannot claim Tainus Besulin to be mafsid al ksuba. Omer Rav Sheshes lo kasha. Haram Gamliel vehar Rabbi Yoshua. Now the truth is, to understand this statement of Rav Sheshes, we'd have to learn half of the first parak of Ksubas. This is one of the most profound sugyas. I'm going to try to simplify it, but at the same time clarify it. So wish me luck on this. The question is the following. There's a 12-month period of time between Erusin and Nisuin. And who's going to be believed in the following scenario? After the chuppah, he comes to Beis Din and he puts forward a tainus pasul. And he says that I found a Pesach Pasuach. Okay? Now, she claims what's called Misharastani Nenasti, that it's your loss because after the Erusin, during this 12-month period, somebody raped me. That's her claim. And there's going to be a gigantic debate as to whether or not we believe her. Because normally we say Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya. We don't know whether her situation was generated after the Erusin or before the Erusin. If it was generated before the Erusin, then she has no rights to Ksuba. She should lose her Ksuba because she was already a Ba'ul at the time of the Erusin. If on the other hand she's correct in her claim that Misharastani, Erusin is going to etch into stone the Ksuba, and she was a Basula according to her claim at the time of the Erusin, hence she has rights to the Ksuba. He's claiming, I don't know, go prove it. Go prove to me that something happened after the Erusin and made you into a Ba'ula. Maybe you were a Ba'ula even before the Erusin. So who do we believe in this case? And that's going to be a major machlok between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel's shita is Mipia Anu Chayim, which means that we live from her mouth. We have no way of knowing exactly when this incident took place, and therefore we believe her. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, lo mipia anu chayim. She wants to claim her ksuba. She admits that she's a ba'ula. Now she wants to claim she became a ba'ula during the Erusin period, which is called Tachtov, Misharas Tanina Nasti. Well, the burden of proof is on her. And she has no proof, and therefore she has no rights to collect her ksuba. Oh. Now, let's talk about Chereshes and Shota. In the case of Chereshes and Shota, I'm going to ask you a misleading question. What is her claim? She has no claim. Why? Because she's a Chereshes and a Shota. She's not a Bardas, so she can't make a claim. And even if she would mumble something, the halacha would not validate it. So now we're going to have the following two brisos which contradict each other. One brisa says that she gets a full ksuba of Masayim, and that's cool. That's the first brisa that says, I'm sorry, Lou, maybe I'm mixing the two brises. Just 1 second.
Yeah.
No, the second brise. The second brise, which says, Elam Tainus Pesulin, which means that his claim is completely thrown out of court, that brise reflects the shita of Rabbi Gamliel. Now, again, Rabbi Gamliel is based on the fact that she claims Misharas Tanina Nasti, and she's believed. That's Rabbi Gamliel Mipia Anu Chayim. Here, she's a Chereshes and a Shota. We cannot apply the principle of Mipia Anu Chayim. She has no claim. But here, we're basing ourselves on the theoretical claim, meaning, had she made this claim, if she would have had Das, she would be believed, according to Rabbi Gamliel. And hence, it means that the Ksuba, so to speak, is considered to be in her back pocket. She has the Ksuba in her back pocket. I mean, she's, so to speak, Muchzekes. She has a Chazak on her Ksuba. And now the burden of proof bounces back into the court of the Baal. He has to prove that she lost her ksuba. And therefore, even though Rabbi Gamliel's official case, that he in the context in which he made his statement, was where she made a claim to protect her ksuva, to defend herself, and said she was Mishra Stadi Nasti. Here, we're going to apply Rabbi Gamliel, and this is a real extension of Rabbi Gamliel, to the case of Chereshis and Shota. And we're going to make believe as if she had made this claim of Mishra Stadi Nasti. Or, shall we say, we're going to put her that claim into her mouth and accept it as a claim. The other brisa, which says that Yeshla Tainis Pesula, which means he can claim that he was fooled and he wants to be, and he's Mafsid Haksuba, that's Rabbi Yeshua. Because Rabbi Yeshua says, Lo mi piya anu chayim. In other words, even if this Chereshis and Shota would have claimed Misharastani Nasti, they would not be believed. And therefore, Yeshlo Tainis Pesulim. Let me just get this straight, make sure I didn't mess up the names here. Just give me a second. Just one second. I'm going over this one more time for myself to make sure that I didn't mislead you. So again, according to Rav Gamliel, who says that what? That she's believed is therefore Elo Tainis Pesulim. Right. Now let's go the other way around. Now, the Rishon says, if you hold Yeshlo Tainis Pesulim, Yeshlo Tainis Pesulim. That's the first price. Okay, great. I'll tell you what confused me, because the Masifta calls the first price the second price. That's where I got confused, because I said, wait a minute, did I make a mistake? So again, the first of the two prices, which again he calls it the second price, we called it the first price. The first of the two vices that we learned today says Yeshlam Tainis Pesulin. That reflects the Shita of Rabbi Gamliel, of Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Yeshua is saying that even if she would have put forth her claim, she would not be believed, because Lo Mi Piya Anu Chayim, he's considered Muchzak on the Ksuba. Hence Yeshlam Tainis Pesulin, he can come in and say about this Chayreshis Shota that she Pesah Pasuf Matzasi. The second vice that we learned today, which says Ein Lehem Tainis Pesulin, assumes the Shita of Rabbi Yeshua. I'm sorry, the second vice that says Ein Lehem Tainis Pesulin assumes the Shita of Rav Gamliel, that if she would have claimed Mishras Tani Nanasi, she would be believed, and therefore in this case we. So the Gemara asks immediately, Amar the Shamat Leilam Gamliel Heich the Katana E. When do we hear Rabbi Gamliel saying that we believe her? That's only the Katana E. She put forward the claim, but Heich the Lo Katana E. If she did not put forward the claim of Mishras Tani Nasti, Mishamit Le? Did we ever hear that Rav Gamliel says that she has a right to Aksuba if she doesn't even put forth a claim? And in the case of Chereshis and Shota, she doesn't put forth a claim. And the Gemara says, yes, there is a situation in which Rav Gamliel would protect her rights to the Aksuba despite the fact that she makes no claim. And that's based on a pasuk in Mishle, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Which is called Sach Picha Le'ilem. Sach Picha Le'ilem. Now, I'm not sure why we don't see this word in the Gemara, but I'm going to give you the word, the terminology, so you'll know it all over Shas. And that's called Taininon. Okay, you want me to spell that for you? Because I know, Chaim, you like to write this down. Because it's a very important word in Shas. Ta'aninon.
Okay.
Tet ayin nun yud nun nun. Ta'aninon.
Okay.
How many nuns are there? Ta'aninon.
Three
nuns. Right. Ta'aninon means that we, meaning Bezdin, put forth the claim on behalf of someone else. And there are various situations throughout Shas, mostly in the Zikin, in the Bavas, where Bezdin will put forth a claim. It's a little bit like playing the role of a lawyer, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by a lawyer is that, you know, the halacha, generally speaking, doesn't believe in a lawyer. You know, the person who's being litigated, you know, the litigant himself has to put forward their own claim. We're not going to claim for them. But there is one very, shall I say, small slice of cases in which we actually are the lawyers, meaning we, the Beis Din, are self-appointed lawyers on behalf of the defendant. And that is Taininan. I'll give you an example. Taininan Liyisomim is a classical case where the father died, and now somebody is suing the Yisomim, the orphans, their young children. They have no way of knowing anything about the monetary financial situation of their father. Someone is suing their father. So we'll put forward a claim to protect them. And that claim will force the plaintiff, the Toveya, to bring clear evidence to support, absolute evidence to support his claim. Other situations, you could have a case where, let's say, a lover claims that he repaid a loan, but the malva was out of town, so there's no way that the malva would know whether he paid it or not. A whole variety of cases. Here in Chereshes Veshota, with regard to Haksuba, we have an application of the principle of Taininan. The source for this Taininan is a pasuk in Mishlei, Psach Picha Le'ilim. Open the mouth of someone who's mute. And why is this person mute? For any number of reasons. Either because there's no way they could have known anything to make a claim, there's no way they could have been have access to the information that they would need, or because they don't have the das, they don't have the mental capacity to put forward the claim. So therefore, Rav Gamliel, insofar as he says that the Isha, the woman herself, is mukzekes piksubasa, and in general the burden of proof is on him, so that if she is capable of making a claim, we're not going to make a claim on her behalf. If she's a bas das, she's not a chereshes or a shota, we anticipate her to come forward with a claim. If she doesn't come forward with a claim, then odos bal din, shtika kodos, she doesn't come a claim, then we're going to assume that his claim is right, and he doesn't have to pay the ksuba. If on the other hand she's a chereshes and a shota, then we don't have a question, well, why didn't she put forward the claim? She's not capable of putting forward the claim. She's a chereshes and a shota. And therefore, we're going to put the claim forward on her behalf. Why? Because taininan. Because she's mukzekes b'ksuba. Now we're going to force him to bring clear-cut proof that the be'ila, when he finds a pesach pasul, took place before the erusin. He would have to bring two eidim to testify that they saw the maisa bia before erusin, because she has a cheskas ksuba. Not so according to Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says motzi mechavel v'raya. If she wants to establish the ksuba, and we have questions about the validity of the ksuba, that's her responsibility to do so. Now, if this be the case, Rabbi Osai, then let's go back and talk for a minute about knas. So what's going to be the deal with chereshes and shota as far as knas is concerned? Let me try to explain my question. We're saying that there's a stira between two brisos about tainus besulin. And we're going to reconcile that contradiction by introducing the machlokas between Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. That machlokas seems to revolve around the issue of taininan, whether we would find her mukzekes b'ksuba, therefore taininan, or not taininan. And the whole issue is whether or not she gets her ksuba. Now let's ask a different question. What about the biology question? Is she a basula or is she not a basula? The impression you would get is that she is a basula. He found a Pesach Pasuach. That means it was an unusual case. And now we want to know, when did this be'ila take place? Before the erusin or afterwards? And that depends upon Taimina. But as far as her biology is concerned, clearly she is Becheskas Basula. So it's not the pshat that we assume that every chereshes and shota never is victimized. No. This is an exceptional case. Now, if I'm right, then perhaps I can answer a question. Take a look at the first price that we learned today. It says about chereshes and shota, yesh lahem knas. The second Braisa doesn't mention a word about Knas, am I right? It says, Hachireshis Vashot, etc. Ein Lohem Tainis Pesuit. I don't see a word about Knas. Is it possible, therefore, that even the second Braisa admits that she gets Knas? She has a Cheskes Pesuah. The question is, when he claims Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, and we're dealing with a fluke, an unusual set of circumstances where she is, in fact, a Ba'ula, when did that Be'ila take place? And does she lose her Ksuba? Do we assume the Be'ila took place before Erisin or after Erisin? And that depends upon the machlokas about whether she's considered mukzekes b'ksubas, and whether we apply tainin or not. But I'm suggesting that even according to the second brice of Ein Lehem Tainis Pesulin, she would still collect knas. Again, I don't have a clear-cut proof, but the omission, why did the brice say Ein Lehem Tainis Pesulin, the Ein Lehem Knas? Why did the Braisa stop short of saying that? The previous Braisa says, Yesh Lehem Knas, Yesh Lehem Tainis Pesulin. Why did the second Braisa omit that? So what I'm suggesting is that in light of this reconciliation between two Braisas by introducing Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, the entire debate is whether or not, in a case where we find it to be a Ba'ula, she was a Ba'ula before the Erisin or after the Erisin, and whether she loses her Ksuba. But it's only because we found her to be a Ba'ula. In the absence of that discovery, we have every right to assume that she is a Ba'ula. Now, in the case of Bogeres, there we know that Eilem Knas, as we discussed, because the Mishnah says Eilunaris she Eilem Knas. So that the Braisa didn't have any... there was no compelling reason to say Ein Lehem Knas. In the case of Mukaseitz, likewise, she doesn't have Besulin. So we know that she doesn't have Besulin, hence she doesn't get Knas. The discussion about Bogeres and Mukaseitz is a discussion about Tainis Besulin. Why? Okay, in Mukaseitz, I'm not sure why, but in the case of Bogeres, I understand that her Besulin are not totally intact, but there's still something left. You know, in Yiddish we say Episkibliben, you know, so there's some Shiraim of her Besulin, and therefore he expects to find, you know, to find some amount of Dam, and there was no Dam, not even a drop of blood. He claims that proves that she had a Be'ila. And maybe in the case of Mukaseitz, you could say that he expects that he would find Dam, or maybe in the case of Mukas Eitz, he expected to find the Pesach Sosum. In other words, the Eitz was a sharp object that ripped the membrane, but it didn't open up her area there such that he should find her to be Pesach Pasuach. And that's the Chiddush here. No, that once she's a Mukas Eitz, he has to assume that Pesach Pasuch, or alternatively, once she's a Mukas Eitz, her Ksuba goes down from a Sayim to Mona, and therefore he cannot claim that he wants to be Mafsid of the Ksuba. Okay, Rabbi Osef, I'm going to ask you for a pencil if you don't mind. And we're going to start the Mirtz Hashem with Bogeres tomorrow. That's always a good place to start. And we basically just
have 7 tomorrow.
Yeah, 7 o'clock, and we just have 2 lines, you know, left on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, and then we can turn to Lamed Vav Amud Beis, which means we're ready for the next Mishnah. That's exciting. We can make a Siyum on the first Mishnah. I was hoping to make a Siyum today, but